But as Jesus said to Judas, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners, as it is written of him, but woe to him by whom that betrayal comes. So even though it's written, even though it's the will of God, woe to that man. This is, and it goes to the question of, as Paul said, this is whenever people learn about predestination, they always ask the same question. And the Apostle Paul already said you're going to ask it. Which proves that when I say the same thing and you ask the question, that means I'm communicating the same message that Paul was communicating. Which is this. This is the question you ask. How can he yet find fault? For who hath resisted his will? It's from Romans 9. Thou wilt then say unto me, how doth he yet find fault? For who has resisted his will? Who, if you can't resist the will of God, how does God find fault with you? And as Paul said, hey, who are you to reply against God? How about that for a question? And to many people, and to any intellectual type person, certainly to me, it seems like a cop-out. Like, you didn't answer the question. How do you justify that? And he's saying, and what Paul's saying is, he doesn't have to justify it. He's God. He's God. He doesn't have to justify anything he does. Not to you. It doesn't mean that he's violating his own righteousness within himself. Now, you may not judge him righteous. Remember the parable of the workers in the field from Matthew chapter 20. They all agreed to work for a penny. And at the end, when some thought, hey, we deserve more because we worked longer. Your ways are not equal. He said, is your eye evil because I'm good? Because I'm good to some people, you have an evil eye towards me. You have all that you deserve. Man does not come into life making any sort of agreement with God whereby God owes you something. God actually owes us nothing. He doesn't even owe us a penny. Therefore, if we are created to be men who are opposed to God, who are we to say anything? Because shall the thing framed say to him that framed it, why did you make me this way? Because I tell you, if he did not make you that way, you would not exist. Someone else would be there. Because you are who you are. And that's the point. We look to God and we should say, well, God made us. We're already indebted. And if he gives others a reward beyond what we get, who are we to say what he does with what he owns? He owns everlasting life. It's his. He gives it to whom he wills. He doesn't have to give it to everybody. He owns the truth. He gives it to who he wills. He doesn't have to reveal it to everybody. He doesn't have to enlighten everybody. He doesn't need to soften the hearts of the Pharisees. Because it is certain that if their hearts are hard, it's because that is part of the way that they were made. It's like Pharaoh in Egypt. The Lord hardened his heart. Whom he wills, he hardens. People say, well, their hearts are already hardened. They did it to themselves. Well, how come they were like that? How come they hardened their hearts and I didn't, if it's up to us? What is it about them? Am I just a better guy so God chooses the better people? Is that what you're saying? That it's not of grace? That it's according to those who merit it? I mean, those who are smart enough to choose the right things or good enough to choose the good things. So if I'm good enough internally to where in spite of my sin, I see righteousness and I say, I want to do that. God says, I picked that one because internally he is better than the others. Because that is what it comes down to. If it's according to our free will, then we are determining everything by the goodness that is innate within us. When truthfully, there's nothing that we have not received already first from God. Meaning, if I have a heart to seek him, it's because God put a heart to seek him in me. If I have a heart that shuns away from evil, it's because God put a heart that shuns away from evil in me. And whether it be by experiences that happen in our life, it's all the things that are lined up, the circumstances that soften us and harden us, that make us who we are. Between genetics, it's nurture and nature. It's all together. And God is overall. He's responsible for all of it. And the Son, when he was in the world, could be grieved because he was touched in all points like as we are. He could, you know, as Paul said in the book of Hebrews, we don't have a high priest that cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. When he feels the hardness of their hearts, it grieves him. It grieves him. Because it grieves me. It grieves me when men's hearts are hard and I can't speak to them the word. It grieves me when they're so hard. And I do pity people. You say, Paul, well, you always speak so rough. Well, I speak the way I speak. But That does not speak necessarily to how I feel about something. I mean, Jesus doesn't say, you're making me sad. No. He looks around with anger, being grieved. Anger and sadness. It is not like he was just angry.
You, who harden your hearts.
Remember, you can't harden your heart unless God gives you a heart willing to be hardened and the will to harden it. So there's nothing in this that at all detracts from the doctrine of predestination. You know, Jesus, when he came into, but Jesus is modeling our behavior, how we ought to be. And he doesn't model a fatalistic, you know, he doesn't walk around with just bored like, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. This is the mechanistic, deterministic way it should be. You are this way, I am this way, so let's just let it be. Because that isn't how it works. Things change. Look at the Apostle Paul, the change that came over him. But it did not come from within himself. Though changes can seem to come with it from within ourselves, but we who are initiated into the doctrines of Christianity and the doctrines of Christ know that it is God who moves on our hearts to move us towards him, to move us towards accepting the truth. Free will is something we all experience. It's part of our experience. It's the way we experience life. We do not have God's perspective. God sees the world in the deterministic sense. He sees it as all predetermined. Those are the facts. But the way things work on the ground are not according to that because you don't see it like that. You don't see those things. And it's much more, God is so powerful. He created a world in which he has predetermined everything, but we have no sense of that predetermination. And everything's operating according to what we want to do. And if we fail to understand how that works in truth, it is just a failure of our human understanding. It does not take away from the fact that God is in control. As people are fond of saying, God's in control, but their doctrine says man's in control. And it's absolutely not right. So the question of healing on the Sabbath day is kind of a moot point, right? I mean, today we understand with hindsight. We don't have, as I read in the last chapter from 1 Corinthians chapter 2, how, hey, you know, God has hidden their eyes. He's blinded them. You know, and I say also the question that he puts to them is a good one. Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or evil? And this is a question that is still pertinent today. I am not a day keeper. I don't keep a particular day. I teach every day. And if you notice, sometimes I take a day off from teaching. It's usually because I have to take a kid to the dentist or to the doctor or something else comes up where I have to leave early in the morning. But I don't have a particular day I break on. If nothing comes up, I could go on indefinitely.